A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Through a round window, an airplane wing glides over a body of water. The 14th of February, 2013, the Gulf of Mexico.
X-ray radar contact log.
28 degrees, 41 minutes, 30 seconds.
Sometimes there are those scenarios that come along that just grab everyone's attention. I mean, I remember just the rush to get there and knowing that we wanted to start getting eyeballs on this giant story. We had camera people, correspondents, you know, photojournalists. We had crews on boats. We had a helicopter up in the air. We couldn't get enough. America couldn't get enough.
3, 2, 1, right under us.
A cruise ship floats under the plane.
Right now, we're getting our first look at that stricken cruise ship that's become a floating disaster area.
A rescue helicopter hovers above the ship.
And take a look at this. Our helicopter captured passengers lying on the deck, spelling out the word help.
What the is happening on this cruise ship?
A passenger zooms down a giant water slide, a Netflix documentary series, a Raw production.
We just love going on cruises.
A Raw production.
The food, the pool, the water slide. I mean, what more could you ask? Everything was great.
Bikini-clad women dance.
We're having the most fun. So nice to just really uncheck from the real world.
We're having a great time. We were like, this is awesome. And then the lights go out.
The scene cuts to black.
Oh my God.
That's when all of us were like, what the fuck?
More than 4,000 people are stuck on a cruise ship that is dead in the water.
A dream vacation has fast become a nightmare for thousands of passengers.
I'm telling you, it got bad fast.
Oh my God.
Suddenly, everyone's out for themselves.
It was terrifying. All of a sudden, we were like, oh shit, the ship is on fire.
Let's go, let's go.
Oh my God, this is it. We're going down.
Move, move, move.
It turns out it wasn't the fire that was the problem. It was the freaking toilets.
There's shit and piss on the floors in the cafeteria.
There's only so much a toilet can take.
It was just a floating Petri dish.
Oh my God.
It was a slowly unfolding nightmare that you couldn't stop.
Just get me off this ship.
A title appears, Train Wreck, Poop Cruise. On a sunny day, a cruise ship floats in a marina. In an arcade, a young white man in glasses sits for an interview, Devin.
Hi. The first time that I heard about going on a cruise was a simple phone call from my fiance saying, hey, my family's going on a cruise, let's do it together. Everything's taken care of. And it was an easy yes. The itinerary was 2 days at sea. And then we were going to stop at Cozumel, Mexico. And then we were gonna get back out to sea and have a nice day back to Galveston. It's gonna be great. But I was a little nervous because I was going to be spending a lot of time with my fiancé's father.
In a photo, a white-haired man gives a wide-eyed glare.
I had just asked him for permission to marry her. And so, of course, I wanted him to like me. You know, I wanted him to be excited that I was the man who was going to marry his daughter.
I went on the cruise with the one intent, and that was for me and Becca to have daddy-daughter time.
Larry.
I just recently got divorced. And, you know, that was a very difficult time.
Rebecca.
My dad's my best friend, so I did miss him, and I was excited to spend time with him for sure. Definitely, definitely.
There's the ship. That's the ship we're going on. Looks like a building.
A large ship towers over boarding passengers.
I don't think you realize how big cruise lines are until you're standing in front of it, realizing you're standing in front of a skyscraper on its side and it's floating. It's humongous. When you walk in, there's just like grand foyer with like a spiral staircase and chandeliers. You walk over here and it's an arcade.
Welcome to the casino.
Suddenly you're in this grand hall with unlimited food. And then there's a theater where you could see live entertainment. And then suddenly you're out on deck and like there's gigantic chess pieces and like people enjoying like having a good time in a spa. And it just seems like everywhere you look, there's something to do.
Three white women sit for an interview. Kaylin, Ashley, Jamie.
I was getting married. It was my bachelorette party.
Oh, I want to make sure I don't flash anybody.
We all talked about it and discussed and decided that a cruise would be a fun way to celebrate.
I remember being so excited. It's a cruise. It's going to be perfect.
We put our luggage down and we went straight up to the bar.
The women take shots.
We were supposed to go to some kind of safety briefing, but I remember being like, we're not going to need this information. Like, what are the chances we need to remember a muster station, right?
We wanted to get the party started. Take a selfie.
They pose for a selfie. Day one. On a sunny day, passengers stand on balconies.
And then they honk the big horn, and you're like, okay, it's the start of the great vacation.
Crazy excited.
Six men belly flop into a pool simultaneously.
The first thing we did was, you know, grab a drink, go out on deck. Sit, enjoy, have a chat with my father-in-law, let him know I'm a good guy.
We were in the sun all day, drinking cocktails.
It was amazing.
I remember walking up to the bar and suddenly this voice breaks through the ceiling and it's this like positive British woman. Hi, it's Jen, so excited. Yeah, she was great.
Good afternoon, welcome on board the beautiful Carnival Triumph.
Jen was the voice of the Triumph.
Jen.
Yeah. She's vacation Barbie.
Come and join us, come around the table. I hit that music, then it's chippy. Take it away. I loved my job. I absolutely loved every aspect of it. I genuinely really like the passengers. I've always said this, people are just there to have a really nice holiday. And you're there just to facilitate that and help them out to do it. That's all it is at the end of the day. People want to have a nice time.
Have a beautiful day on the Carnival Triumph. Day two.
Jen, cruise director.
But it's not all fun and frolics and having a lovely time with the guests. The ship is very much two worlds.
The view passes through a large industrial kitchen.
We had about 1,200 crew members from all over the world.
Hannah, bartender.
As a kid growing up in Soviet Union, I could never imagine that I would be working on the cruise ship with Americans, saying "Yeehaw" and enjoying it. I mean, it's two completely opposite universes. You know, it's an American industry. Guests, they are there to enjoy, and you are there to work.
Abi, chef.
For the kitchen, you have to work at least 70 hours a week, sometimes more. Initially, it was really difficult for me because when I came from India, I was not used to working so hard. But at the same time, we had a lot of fun.
Oh, damn, there is so much fun on the cruise ship when you are a crew. There is lots of sex on the cruise ship. Like, damn, so much sex you don't want to know. Like, everything is hard and fun.
On a sunny day, the ship floats by a dock. Day three.
Arriving at Cosmo was awesome because it's colorful and there's music and people welcome you when you get off the boat. So yeah, we were ready to continue the great time.
At a beach, tourists sit under a palapa, a thatched hut.
I remember Becca was splashing around in the water and playing and laughing and having a great time. And
it was perfect, amazing.
When she's happy, I'm happy.
It was a great time. I was getting along with my father-in-law, and we had some wonderful food. We stuffed our faces.
Women dance under a palapa.
We were drinking harder in Cozumel than we were on the boat.
In photos, they wear Lucha Libre masks.
This was absolutely the bachelorette party that I had dreamed of.
When we walked back to the ship, we realized that we've only got one day left. Now you're headed back home.
Everything went perfect up to that point. I mean, it really was. Couldn't ask for any better.
I literally don't remember getting back on board. So I could have been crawling, I could have been carried. I don't remember that part.
We left our dignity in Cozumel. I mean, as soon as my head hit the pillow, I was out.
In a reenactment at night, two women of the Bachelorette trio lie in bed. They stir. Day four.
I just remember opening my eyes and, like, looking around, pitch black, like, what is going on?
5:28 a.m.
The noise is coming from, like, a speaker in the ceiling. And so you're staring at it. And then suddenly you hear Alpha Team, Alpha Team, Alpha Team.
Alpha Team, Alpha Team, Alpha Team, attention, Alpha Team.
Waking up suddenly like that, your first instinct is like, I need water. I don't feel good. This is so loud. Shut it off.
Right.
Somebody needs to turn it off.
I'm nervous. I have no idea what Alpha Team Alert means.
I was not in my own cabin when the alarm went. You know, it happens. I was in this guy's cabin who works in the engineering room, and I see him jumping off the bed, putting on his overall. I was like, okay, something is going on.
I was in the kitchen working night shift. At that time, I thought it was a drill. But within a few seconds, I saw smoke coming out from the drain of the sink. All of us were like, what the fuck?
I went up to the bridge, and as soon as I walked in, I knew this is something serious. People were on phones and radios and getting alarms going off.
People were like running, banging on doors. You could hear the panic.
Get out!
I'm like, oh my God, this is it. This is the Titanic. We're going down. Where is our muster station?
Steven, guest services manager.
I put a couple of the radios on just to sort of hear what was going on from up on the bridge. I could hear them calling for the fire team to head down to deck zero. No amount of training, you know, can prepare you for. It was like a numb feeling. You know, I maybe should not admit this, but I can't really swim.
Once we got up to the Lido deck, the first thing I remember seeing, it's like etched in my brain, is seeing the big red fin. There were flames just shooting out of it. And that's really when I woke up and was like, oh shit, the ship is on fire.
In a video, a large fin smokes.
The captain came over and said, there's a fire in the engine room. Then you're like, are we going down? Are we gonna have to get the lifeboats? Is this general emergency? I mean, is this it?
Fire on a boat is even more terrifying than a fire on land. It can spread everywhere and there's nothing you can do. There's no firefighters that can come and save you.
I just stood there waiting for the captain to tell me what was going on. He said, there's been a fire in one of the 60s or generators, but it's out. So you got five others, five spares. We're good, we're great. And then I kind of was like, okay, I need to, I gotta tell the guests.
6:14 a.m.
Everything is completely under control. So please, folks, there's no point waiting in the muster station. Go back to your cabin, go back to bed, go and have some coffee, have some breakfast. It's nothing to worry about. No need to be waiting in the muster stations.
That was reassuring. And so I told my fiance, everything's gonna be fine. Maybe we should go get some coffee.
I think I'm gonna order the cream caramel.
And then the lights go out.
Whoa.
This is just like the cruise.
Suddenly it went dark on the bridge. Everything's out.
It's like darkness. What the hell's going on?
Totally dark. You can't see anything.
Then we audibly heard the AC cut out.
When power goes, that's it. Everything's out. You know, from the little things like making a cup of tea or a coffee or a slice of toast to the whole propulsion of the ship. So technically, we are just floating dead in the water.
Now it's obvious there's no control of the boat.
I remember the feeling of uncertainty, not knowing what was going to happen. I was terrified.
I immediately turned on my cell phone to text my fiancé, and I quickly realized that the cellular was out too.
We've had power cuts before, and engineers go and do whatever they do to turn it back on. So I just thought, once the engine room cools down, they'll go in, they'll turn everything back on, and then we'll be back to normal in an hour or so.
7:57 a.m.
In the meantime, though, it was like, what are we going to do? What's the immediate problems that we can work on now? And they, of course, were lights. There's no lights, but the emergency lighting was on, so that wasn't like a major issue. Air conditioning, people, if they're inside, can go up to the open decks, also not too bad. And then somebody realized that the toilets weren't working. They needed electricity, so they weren't going to flush, which is, with thousands of guests, a major issue. We had to come up with a plan of what to do. Initially, it was, you know, the idea of peeing overboard. Like, for a man, it's okay, but not for a woman. You know, they could fall in. Half jokingly, I was like, well, we can do a number one in the shower, which seems like a really feasible option. So it was, that sounds good. Let's go with that. Pee in the shower. And then for the number two, that was definitely a trickier problem than number one.
Very important information, folks. As you probably know by now, the toilets are not flushing, and it's going to start causing a little bit of a problem.
Holy shit, I remember this.
Come up with a plan. So, folks, well, you do need to do a number one, everybody. You can do it in the shower. And if you do need to do a number two, what we're going to do is we're going to deliver some red bags to all of the bathrooms on board. And if you do need to do a number two, we ask that you please do it in the red bag and drop it off in the bins in the corridors. Thank you, folks, and I'll be back with any more updated info.
What the fuck?
You want me to what?
Excuse me?
No.
I'm not doing that.
Like, it was just like, oh, what world are we living in?
This can't be real.
I mean, I never thought in my weirdest dream that I will see a day when I will have to poop in a red bag.
I know it was hideous, but that's the only option that we had. Do it in a plastic bag. Tie the bag, put it in a bin, and then dispose of them down below. It really was a genius plan.
In a reenactment, a red biohazard bag slides under a door.
As soon as I saw the red bags, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. Mm-mm. No.
I was like, red bag? No way. Not happening.
I immediately started taking Imodium.
10:31 a.m.
At that point in time, we needed to let Carnival head office know what was happening on board. Fortunately, we had a satellite phone that worked. And it became my responsibility to keep that communication going with Shoreside.
Miami. A gray-haired white man sits for an interview. Buck Banks, Carnival PR representative, Newman Public Relations.
When I heard about the fire on the Triumph, it was immediately crisis mode. You have to remember, a cruise ship is the biggest machine on the planet. And so when things go wrong, they typically go wrong in a big way. In the event of an emergency like this, the first step is to put out a holding statement, very short, and distribute that to the media, something to the effect of, the Carnival Triumph has experienced a fire in the engine room. The ship is just without propulsion right now, and we're working to fix it. We did not mention that the toilets were not working. You give them what you believe they need, and no more than that.
New York. A blonde white woman sits for an interview. Brooke Baldwin, former CNN news anchor.
The first time CNN people in the newsroom would have heard anything about Carnival, it would have been through this press release. It said there had been a fire on board the Triumph. It was contained. You know, some things aren't working, but for the most part, everyone's okay. I'm thinking, we're fucking CNN. We've got the State of the Union, Iraq, Pyongyang, Vatican. The Pope resigning is a story, okay? So there's easily eye rolls over a cruise story at first. I don't think so. I would imagine some local affiliates picked up the story, but not national news.
Lubbock, Texas.
The Carnival cruise ship Triumph is drifting along.
I was at home when my phone rang, and it was my friend from work. Oh, did you hear about the fire on the Carnival Triumph? And I'm like, no, I didn't hear any of that. My daughter's on that ship with her daddy.
Mary Porrett, Rebecca Porrett's mom.
Instantly, the anxiety and the frustration and the fear came over me. I couldn't get her on the phone. I couldn't talk to her at all. I was frantically trying to find information on what had happened on that ship. That's my baby out there. I didn't know if she was okay.
As a 12-year-old, it's very scary to not be able to talk to your mom and tell her everything that's going on and tell her, you know, how you feel. And, you know, you just want both of your parents there to hug you and hold you, and you can't have that.
12.09 p.m. On a deck, passengers lay on bedding and lounge chairs.
By noon, we were trying to, you know, go about our day as normal, you know, as we could. But we had the hot sun blaring down on us, you know, trying to find some cold water, just rummaging around the ship, trying to figure out, like, okay, what do we eat? What do we drink? And why the hell isn't the bar open?
Inside the boat, it was even worse. I mean, it'll just suffocate you in minutes because there's nothing stirring, no air at all.
I suddenly felt so claustrophobic almost. And that's when I had that thing of like, okay, I have never needed to do a number one, that's we, this bad in my life. And so I was like, y'all, I need to pee. Does somebody want to come with me? Because you knew it was dark.
Yeah.
So you kind of want like a buddy system. I don't want to go alone. It's too scary.
And then one of the other guests on the boat was like, this is what you need to do. So we had taken the beacon out of the life jacket. He told us to pour like soda on it so it gets wet and starts to light up.
And so the whole time you have like this discotheque going on while you're doing it.
A bright light blinks on and off as a woman squats in a shower.
It was a very bizarre experience.
This is my first cruise, but I don't think this is normal.
And then I was like, I've got to at least rinse off, like, ugh. It was just horrible.
Like, it's pretty disgusting. Are you for real? Oh my God.
1:27 p.m., passengers crowd the deck.
So about 1:30, the temperature had finally dropped down in the engine control room. And fire safety, the safety team were able to get in and inspect what happened inside. That's when the chief engineer discovered that this is a lot more serious than first imagined.
They came back and said that pretty much the fire had burned through all the power cables to the whole ship. So there was no hope of getting the power back. That was it. your heart just drops. Like, what do we do now?
Shoreside's plan was to call up to Progreso, Mexico, the closest port, and get a tugboat to come out and start pulling us in.
That's when we heard the new plan, which is we're going to get tugged back to Progreso tomorrow. So this is not the time to go to the bathroom in a trash can. I was determined. I am not going to use the red bag. I'm going to make it.
5:58 p.m.
As we got closer to dusk, as we got closer to the end of the first day, the first night is coming, we realized we cannot sleep in these rooms because it was just so hot.
And we've been floating for like 9, 10, 12, 12, 13 hours. What is it? 6 o'clock? 12, 13 hours? Okay. That's when I started to see people dragging their mattresses out on deck.
We completely left our floor, brought our mattresses up, and we laid in the hallway. There's people laying beside you that you've never met or probably would never talk to on the boat.
In my mind, I'm thinking, this is not good, you know.
Photos of passengers sleeping in common areas flash.
I think all of us were just ready to go to bed. It had been like an emotionally taxing day. Mm-hmm. And we just wanted to wake up and see the Mexican shoreline and, you know, jump on that shore and have a margarita.
The scene cuts to black. In the daytime, birds fly through the sky.
But when I woke up, I was like, oh shit. Where in the hell is Mexico?
Day 5. 8:03 a.m.
A very good morning to you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you did manage to get some sleep last night despite these challenging conditions. The tugboat is scheduled to arrive at 12 noon today. I'll talk to you soon.
The next morning, we woke up and everything had changed. I went down to the lower decks and saw and smelt and felt the air of sickness.
Here are the infamous uvets. That's probably cool if you see.
And then there was the food.
The next day morning, I threw away all the perishable food and started to make sandwiches, onions, tomatoes, whatever we could find for the 3,000 hungry guests on board.
That's the food line. That's 2 of 4 food lines they wrap around.
You would have to wait in line for 2 hours. But when you got up to see what it was that you were waiting on, it was like a soggy bread and tomato lettuce sandwich.
It took a complete turn from the first day where you walk around and there's food everywhere and there's ice cream machines and there's pizza.
What are those?
These are lady fingers.
I have a couple of those. Thank you.
Suddenly, people were very much like in survival mode. Everyone's out for themselves. They're in line to get food. They're going to get as much food as they can.
One hamburger.
All the people are getting paid to give them back. I just want one.
The hoarding on board was ridiculous. People just grabbing everything and sort of taking it like with them to the little camps.
Made me think that, now all these Americans are somehow can feel what it was in dictatorship country where shit like this happens and it doesn't surprise anyone. Yeah, welcome to the Soviet Union, people.
It's like shantytown around here. People are sleeping everywhere.
There were people taking sheets and putting them over chairs and making tent cities. And so there was a rush to get a deck chair and people were tugging and fighting. This is my area, these are my people, and don't come messing with us. You saw that a lot.
A man points to a map.
So your GPS puts us on the F.
Yeah.
Because we're fucked.
Yeah, baby.
1:43 p.m.
All of a sudden, we look out and we see another ship.
A cruise ship approaches.
I was like, this is it. They're gonna save us.
One of the other sister ships, the Legend, was close by and they stopped by and helped us out. It was more food supplies than anything, because logistically and safety-wise, you can't just walk 4,500 people from one ship to the other. Like, it's a huge procedure. It's lowering boats, having a small percentage of people jump on board, bring it across, tie it up, transfer the passengers, and then repeat again.
You broke it.
A dinghy bumps into a lifeboat.
Not an option.
They're just taking pictures of us like we're the freak show in the middle of the ocean. And they are partying, they don't stop dancing.
They're doing the YMCA, and I'm over here popping Imodium.
We're like a scenic detour on their cruise.
Yeah.
Wow, they are really close.
That was the beginning of like this aha moment where we thought, hey, can we get a Wi-Fi signal from that boat?
Passengers hold their phones up towards the Legend.
We were all trying to get as close as we could to steal cell phone reception from it.
Everyone is out on deck, holding their phones up in the air, trying to get reception. And we started to get signal.
I was thinking to myself, this could be bad, you know, because all people are going to try and do is call home or call whoever to let them know that they're stuck in the middle of the ocean, there's no power, and they're taking shits in red bags, you know?
Immediately, I called my mom.
I can't even begin to describe how I felt, you know, seeing her name light up my phone.
I told her that the electricity went out and about the red bags. I told her that everything was just going sideways.
I would never expect that Rebecca would be telling me she's having to poop in a red bag. It's like something that came out of a nightmare movie. You know, when all this is happening on board, I'm wondering why there's not any news coverage of it.
Family members start actually reaching out to us at CNN. They start contacting newsrooms and start telling us details that go quite a bit farther beyond the press release. Like, wait, the toilets aren't working? Something about people and having to go and bags and I don't even... That's when we started saying, this is a story.
More than 4,000 passengers and crew spent last night stranded aboard a cruise ship in the Gulf of Mexico. Here is how one man's wife, who is on board the ship, is describing this.
There's no power. They're having to use other restroom in buckets and bags.
Suddenly, these stories began to appear about the conditions on board the ship.
A four-day pleasure cruise has turned into a nightmare.
4,200 people floating, dead in the water.
Holy Christ, how did that happen? Now the cat's out of the bag. It's like the snowball has started to roll and there's no stopping it.
Houston, Texas.
Supplies are running low on board and emotions are running high as passengers wait to be rescued.
Frank Spagnoletti.
Every time there's a maritime disaster, I'm watching it, okay? You know, it's my business.
Maritime lawyer.
I remember seeing the local news stories with regard to what was happening to these people, and my hair was standing up. I was like, what is this? I mean, this is absurd. These are paying passengers. Carnival is one of the largest cruise ship companies in the world. They're a global multi-billion-dollar business. But I knew that in those recent years, they had some problems with fires on other boats.
The smell of smoke began to fill the nearly 1,000-foot-long Carnival Splendor.
So when I saw this with regard to the Carnival Triumph, obviously my antenna was peaked.
12:17 p.m.
At that time, we'd built everybody up to getting everybody home relatively quickly, getting on land, and then I got a call from Shoreside, and they said the plan has had to change. They told us that since we lost power, the ship had drifted over 100 nautical miles. Now we were nowhere near Mexico. So the new plan now is to take everybody to Mobile, Alabama. This is gonna add on a couple of days at least. My heart just dropped out. I was just like, oh.
Are you kidding? Like, that's absolute disaster.
We found out we were going to Mobile instead of Progreso, and all that made everybody mad.
That was like getting hit in the face.
Yeah.
3 more days of this. It's not gonna get better.
We were starting to smell urine.
Yeah.
Starting to smell the toilets. They weren't draining. And so it would fill up the showers and it would just sit there with nowhere to go.
That's when we realized that we are screwed.
When Jen announces that it's gonna be 2 or 3 more days, it's like, I don't know if I can hold it. I am not going to make it without going to the bathroom and having a number 2.
All right.
Back for more.
So I start hunting for bathrooms because there was a rumor that there were bathrooms and toilets somewhere that worked.
Your toilets work?
No.
Let's see mine.
No.
Yeah.
Our toilets aren't working.
Okay.
But every time I walked into a bathroom, you open up the door. Nope, that one doesn't work. Go into the next one. Nope, that one's disgusting. That one doesn't work.
I really had to go. Number 2. And I found this public restroom and I go inside. And it was the most nastiest thing I have ever seen in my life. People were covering the poop with the toilet paper and then again pooping on top of it. So it was a layer after layer after layer. It was like a lasagna.
3, 4, 5 is clean. Crew members heading there, so you can go there to use it if you want.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Once I found one toilet that worked, it certainly was a relief and also a little bit awkward with my soon-to-be in-laws. Hey, you probably have to do a number 2. I found a working bathroom. Here it is. Hope you're feeling okay. Did you use a red bag yet? It's a really weird conversation to have.
Connell was about being fun chips. And, you know, as crew members, that is told to us, you know, create those fun, memorable experiences. So the decision was made, let's open up the bar for free drinks.
Ooh. I was definitely against the idea of the open bar. People will go nuts.
Hey, they just started giving out liquor for free.
We were like, this is awesome. Free drinks, let's go.
Yes, okay.
Finally, something.
It's something.
Cruises are supposed to be fun.
It's free booze. Let's go.
People were double-fisting drinks, taking them back to their rooms.
It was the craziest, the busiest, the drunkest. Just give me the drinks. Woo-hoo-hoo, yes.
Everything was going great. But then, there's people urinating off the side of the ship. I was like, oh shit.
People were throwing their red bags on the lifeboats. Somebody threw the poop bag and the wind blew it back on somebody sitting on the open deck doused. And that person is like, what the fuck?
The group next to us in Tent City, it was a newlywed husband and wife, and they were having sex right in front of me on the chair. I mean, there was no, like, you want a sheet to put over you? No, they were right there.
I don't know if they couldn't handle their liquor, but fights broke out.
It was getting very scary.
As a dad, your job is to protect, and I can do anything. It was, you know, you feel so small because all this is going on around you, and there ain't a darn thing you can do about it.
It just was like this, now we gotta put a stop to this. Close the bar.
It felt like a small victory, right? Like we got a little bit of our fun back and it took our mind off of the reality. We're stranded at sea by ourselves.
3:01 p.m. A tugboat approaches the ship.
We were so excited when we saw that the tugboats had finally arrived.
AAA finally got here.
Because that means we're moving. There was an end in sight.
It looks like the boat's going that way. This one is keeping our tail from swinging.
probably in reverse. Looks like it's definitely in reverse. But when the tugboat started to pull us,
whoa,
everything shifted.
Man, this listing is gonna be nuts on video.
We were now on our way, but also the angle of the ship had adjusted and everything tilted to the side.
Tugboats are pushing us. Hold on to your phone.
Suddenly the weather turned for the worse.
Dark clouds hang over the ship.
Now I became very aware that this was probably the tipping point.
Brown water splashes out of a shower.
And that's the moment everything spilled.
Somebody's getting hurt.
Oh my gosh.
The whole thing's flooded.
It's sloshing out here too.
What?
Imagine everything that goes in a toilet, right? Piss, shit, all of it. It's just, you know, it's everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
Watch out.
Watch out. I'm telling you, it got bad fast. Everything overflowed into the floor and just kept overflowing.
Raw sewage water.
Oh, shit. That is slippery.
You would be walking down the hallway and all of a sudden, squish, 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 and you know what you're standing in.
Ugh.
We were in excrement.
As soon as I jumped from my top bunk, I had water on my feet and I was like, what the fuck? It was really bad. I had to hold my breath. It was disgusting.
It was everywhere.
Photos of brown liquid on the floor of the ship flash.
At that point, I was like, just get me off this ship.
Day six.
In the overnight hours, all these new details started coming in about the description of what is happening on this cruise.
Our room is flooded. There's sewage, raw sewage in the hallways.
There's shit and piss on the floors in the cafeteria.
This was like, holy shit. At this point, our new boss, Jeff Zucker, constantly looking to raise the ratings, made a decision to go all in on this story. It was a risk, and he needed to take a big risk. He was the new big boss, and we needed eyeballs on the TV screens. And he was willing to put all the chips in the middle of the table. A dream vacation has fast become a nightmare for thousands of passengers on board this Carnival cruise ship. Sewage is dripping down the walls. It was like wall-to-wall coverage.
Let's take a closer look inside this giant ship.
Lots and lots of people in a little space here.
We would talk to maritime lawyers, infectious disease people.
E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, these are all...
I might have even talked to a psychologist or someone to help us understand what it would have been like for these people to be in such an ordeal. You know, we'd be racking our brains trying to think of any possible angle to cover this story morning, noon, and night.
Every time I was watching it on the news, there was a report of more problems on the vessel. I said, my God, it's chaos.
Frank reads a Coast Guard report.
So I started looking into it, and I was shocked at what I had discovered. In 2 years, there were 9 incidents of faulty fuel lines while these vessels were at sea that were potentially causing fires on board. I mean, it's unbelievable. In my plain language, that's called Russian roulette with people's lives.
11:23 p.m.
At that point, I didn't know what day it was. I didn't know what time it was. I didn't know how many days we had been on the boat. I had no idea. Like, you lose track of everything. And so you just wake up to go to sleep to hopefully get back home.
Larry pats Rebecca's thigh. Day 7.
I think when you get stuck at sea like that, your mind wanders. And I think we just wanted to get back home. We were done. We were feeling cabin fever. There's nothing people can do. We're like captive to the problem. You feel like a prisoner.
We were just like doomsday. I mean, it was almost like Survivor, right? I mean, I remember at one point there was an older gentleman even setting up a Bible study.
From the start, I had it all planned out for it to be great, but then it turns so bad that it's like, this is not what I wanted. That I failed.
Larry hangs his head. Rebecca puts her arm around him.
Don't look at me, because then I'll look at
you. It was just a bad situation, and nothing you could do about it.
She rests her head on his shoulder. Day 8, Mobile.
I drove all night to get to Mobile. I was going to be on that dock when my daughter got there. So I pull right up to the edge of the water, and all of a sudden, the news attention, it's everywhere. You know, everyone's calling, everyone's wanting interviews. Huge.
The last thing that she said to me that was the hardest of all is, Mommy, I'm so scared I won't ever get to see you again.
4:17 p.m.
That last day seemed to just really, really drag. You know, I just wanted it to be over. I wanted people to just get off and go home and get in, hot shower, nice bed. And, you know, for me, I kind of just wanted a little bit of peace for me.
Helicopter has arrived.
All right.
All right.
As we got closer to shore, we started to see more planes, more helicopters, and at that point, we knew it was most likely the media.
Just about 30, 35 miles off coast here, this cruise line is finally heading toward Mobile. Now the stories and the video is beginning to come out.
It got really bad, and it went into the elevator. And it started dripping so bad, it sounded like it was raining.
It was raining sewage.
The story metastasized, basically. It kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It just would not die.
You know when you're on Twitter and you see that there's a freaking hashtag, cruise ship from hell, you know that everyone's paying attention.
Tweets appear. Boat now referred to as floating toilet. Hashtag nightmare cruise. Hashtag cruise from hell. Need to sleep but can't stop watching the hashtag cruise ship from hell on CNN.
The risk paid off for CNN. Poop cruise was the biggest news story in all of America.
Welcome back to the Fiesta Ballroom here on Carnival Cruise Triumph. The Superstar Karaoke Bar is now officially a toilet, okay?
The nightmare trip on Carnival Cruise Ship's Triumph.
Stranded at sea, spending 6 days crapping into a plastic bag.
At this point, this had become a PR catastrophe.
Hey, that's enough. Enough of the headlines.
We anticipated it just being a complete media bloodbath when the ship got into port.
9:29 p.m.
Here she is. Here she comes in now.
As soon as the ship starts pulling in, we see people are yelling. They have signs for us. And we can just kind of start feeling their energy of excitement that we're finally here.
The relief.
Finally here.
Listen to that horn, Martin. Horn. Look how happy they are to hear that.
I just remember thanking the crew. I mean, where in their job description was picking up people's feces?
Yeah. I will never take a private bathroom for granted again.
I was really proud of myself for getting through it and not cracking. and just proud of the team, really, for everybody sticking together and working so, so hard.
Now it looks like we're going to be seeing people come off. Yes, these are actually people coming off.
Right, you feel it.
Employees running exactly. Back and forth.
A passenger kisses the pavement.
Although we thought that it would be completely negative, what the guests would say as they exited the ship, far and away we were shocked and relieved that so many of them credited the Carnival crew members with superhuman effort.
I remember coming off the boat and I ran to my mom. I just ran to her full speed and jumped into her arms.
Gosh, the absolute relief that I felt when I hugged her up that first time, and just the tears of release.
I feel a little stronger than I was before.
I went on this cruise for it to be just the happiest time, how great Beck and Daddy are together. But then it turned out being not only that, but how we can get through things together, good or bad.
Rebecca smiles softly as she nods.
It felt good to get to land. And it was me, my soon-to-be father-in-law. We were like shaking hands and hugging and being like, we totally made it through this together, didn't we? And we didn't have to use a red bag.
With all passengers and crew safely back on land, Frank Spagnoletti set about taking Carnival Cruise Line to court.
That ship never should have set sail. And these documents tell you that this vessel had a propensity for fires.
This was something that was totally preventable. So we definitely had a good chance. Problem is, you run into the ticket.
These passengers have no right to sue because Carnival's attorneys say when you buy your ticket, the ticket contract makes absolutely no guarantee for safe passage, a seaworthy vessel, adequate and wholesome food, and sanitary and safe living conditions.
You certainly don't see that disclaimer on the commercial.
It's amazing. I think if most people actually knew that existed at the time, they probably would never buy a ticket. I certainly wouldn't.
All Frank's cases were settled. A photo of the Bachelorette trio appears. Ashley made it to her wedding. Her bridesmaid's gift was wrapped in a red biohazard bag. A photo of Devin, his father-in-law, and others smoking cigars appears. Devin and his father-in-law vacation together every year, but only on dry land. A photo of Larry and Rebecca on a ship appears. Larry and Rebecca continue to enjoy cruises together, but not with Carnival. A photo of Abby wrinkling his nose at a plate of lasagna appears. Abby has never looked at lasagna the same way again. After this incident, Carnival spent $115 million cleaning, repairing, and refitting the Triumph. Today, she still sails under her new name, Carnival Sunrise. Carnival insisted that the fire on the Triumph was just an accident, that recommended actions had been taken to prevent incidents similar to previous ones, and that the vessel was fully compliant and had been certified to sail by regulatory bodies. Passengers were given a full refund, transportation expenses, a $500 payment, and offered a free cruise. Carnival carried out fleet-wide safety upgrades aimed at preventing engine room fires. They changed their terms and conditions, removing caveats about wholesome food, sanitary and safe living conditions, safe passage, and a seaworthy vessel. Audio description provided by International Digital Center, voiced by Denise Halfyard. Credits: Director, James Ross. Executive Producers, Shoen Adelisoy de Nicola, Alexander Marengo, Tim Wardle. Credits continue. Copyright 2025, Netflix. Logos, Raw, Albert Certified Production.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.